opening narration.
Akhotra Foundation presents the Akhotra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhotra AI.
Introduction.
Welcome. Today, we're diving into a book that, well, it might be slim, but it carries just immense weight. We're talking about Elie Wiesel's Night.
A truly foundational work.
Absolutely. Our goal here is to really explore the core of this memoir, look at Wiesel's journey, and understand why this story, written decades ago, still feels so incredibly urgent today.
Mm-hmm. It's more than just a historical account.
Right. You might have read it, maybe in school, maybe you've just heard about it. But Night isn't simply documenting history. It's this profound meditation on faith, on what it means to be human and our capacity for, well, both terrible cruelty and astonishing survival.
And the sheer impact in under 120 pages is staggering. It's like a monument carved from the darkest parts of history.
Exactly. So who is Elie Wiesel? Born Elie Wiesel in Romania in 1928. He passed away in 2016.
Lived a long, impactful life.
He really did. An American Jewish writer, professor, activist, Nobel laureate, and crucially, a Holocaust survivor. He dedicated his life, all 87 years, to being a witness, a voice for those silenced.
A constant advocate for remembrance and human rights.
And Night. It started as a much longer Yiddish manuscript, and the world remained silent. Then condensed, published in French, then English in 1960. It's memoir, testimony. It's essential.
Essential for understanding the Holocaust, certainly, but also, as you said, human nature. It forces you, the listener, to confront these massive questions about memory, trauma, responsibility.
Through the eyes of a boy watching his world, his faith, his family just dismantled. That's its power.
The chronological journey.
Let's trace that journey. It begins in Siet, Transylvania, worlds of light initially.
Yes, born in 1928 into a close-knit Orthodox Jewish family and deeply religious.
He was intellectually curious, drawn to mysticism,
yeah.
Right? The Talmud, Kabbalah.
Even when his father was a bit more practical, more rational.
Yeah, Shlomo, his father, a community leader, his mother, Sarah, nurtured the spiritual side. That tension's interesting.
It is, and it informs his later struggles with faith.
And then there's Moish the Beetle, his first spiritual guide, in a way.
Taught him to question, ironically, and Moish saw the horrors first. He was deported, witnessed mass killings, escaped.
And came back to warn sight.
But they dismissed him, called him mad. That disbelief is just chilling.
A terrible foreshadowing. How a community, even with warnings, could choose denial.
It speaks to that human need for normalcy, maybe. Clinging to hope, even when it's false. The innocence there makes the false so much harder.
Then, 1944, Eliezer's 15, the Germans occupy site.
And things change rapidly. Decrees, ghettos.
Deportation, the cattle cars. 80 people crammed in.
Dehumanizing from the start. That's where Madame Schechter comes in.
Right. Her screams about fire, furnaces, prophetic, terrifying.
And the others trying to silence her. It shows how fear was already breaking people down even before they arrived.
Arrival at Auschwitz-Birkenau. The point of no return.
The selection ramp. Mengele.
Separation from his mother and youngest sister, Zipporah. Forever.
Just gut-wrenching.
And that lie about their ages. He said 18, his father 40. Saved them from immediate death.
A split-second decision with life or death consequences.
Then witnessing the burning pits, the smell. That's where he says his faith, his innocence, was murdered.
His God began to die there, as he put it.
And his relationship with his father becomes everything, the anchor in that hell. Constant tension between surviving and staying loyal.
An impossible burden.
The journey continued. Buna, then the death march to Buchenwald in winter 45. Soviets approaching.
Just brutal, animalistic survival.
And that awful moment, he admits wishing just for a second that his father would die, to be free of the burden, instantly followed by crushing shame.
That honesty is devastating. It shows how deep the trauma cut, eroding even the most fundamental bonds.
Shlomo dies just weeks before liberation. Dysentery, starvation.
It's so close to the end.
And Eliezer feels relief, guilty relief, free at last. Haunting words.
It's that inverted curriculum of the camps again. Normal morality just ceases to exist.
Then liberation, April 45. Weeks later, he sees himself in a mirror. A corpse was contemplating me.
The look in his eyes has never left me. The boy from Syed was gone.
After all that,
hmm.
Silence. For 10 years, he couldn't speak about it.
Understandable. How do you find words for the unspeakable?
The breakthrough came meeting François Mauriac, the French author, in 54.
Mauriac encouraged him to write, to testify.
That led to the huge Yiddish manuscript, then finally, Night.
Hmm.
That act of writing a bearing witness transformed him. Victim to witness, sufferer to teacher.
Gave meaning to survival, perhaps, established his life's mission.
Core philosophy and values.
So what core philosophy emerged from this inferno? What drove him?
Well, it wasn't atheism, despite everything. It was more like a lifelong argument with God. A wrestling.
Right. He said he lost faith in humanity, not necessarily God. Questioning God was part of his faith, rooted in Jewish tradition.
Exactly. And central to that was the absolute imperative of memory, of witness.
A sacred duty, he felt. To honor the dead, yes, but also to prevent future atrocities. Memory as an active ethical force.
It had to be active. Forgetting was dangerous.
And then there's his famous line, the opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference.
That became his driving principle for human rights. Silence equals complicity. You cannot stand by.
That struggle, that pain, gave rise to this powerful moral framework, fighting the world's tendency to forget.
That's what fueled his life's work, really. Transforming personal trauma into a universal call to action.
Three pivotal turning points.
Let's look at three key moments that really shifted his path. First, the deportation itself, May 1944.
The initial shock, not just being forced out, but the community's disbelief, shattering their whole worldview.
Their faith in protection and decency, gone.
Completely. Then the hanging of the Pipel.
Oh, that scene. The young boy, the sad-eyed angel, the theological heart, the book.
When someone asks, where is God? And Faisal hears that internal voice.
Here he is. He is hanging here on this gallows.
That was the death of his childhood God. God wasn't controlling things from above. God was suffering with humanity. A profound shift.
And the third turning point.
The decision to break his silence. 10 years later. Encouraged by Moriak.
Committing the story to paper. That act transformed him.
It gave purpose to his survival. It turned passive suffering into active testimony. It defined his mission.
Human lessons and reflection.
What does Weissel's life and night teach us today? What are the human lessons here?
Well, firstly, the terrifying fragility of civilization. How thin that veneer really is.
Under extreme pressure, compassion, empathy, even love, they can just crumble. It forces you to look at the darkness potentially inside all of us.
It really does. But also the immense power of witness.
In a world that often prefers silence, one voice speaking truth can be revolutionary. Bearing witness is an act of resistance.
A profound one. And maybe the meaning isn't always in the answers.
What do you mean?
I mean, Weissel shows that a meaningful life can be found in the courage to ask the hard questions, to protest injustice, to wrestle with God, with humanity, even when there's no neat reply.
That resonates today, doesn't it? With rising nationalism, misinformation.
Absolutely. Night cuts through all that. It reminds us that every statistic was a person, a life destroyed.
It challenges you, the listener. Are you a witness or a bystander when you see injustice now?
That's the core question it leaves us with. Its enduring relevance. Despite seeing more genocides after the Holocaust, Weissel never gave in to cynicism.
He doubled down on his efforts.
Because the alternative, indifference, was unthinkable for him. That persistence is a powerful lesson. Even facing immense personal challenges later, like the Madoff scandal or controversies like Bitburg.
He stayed focused on that mission. The complexity is there, but so is the commitment.
Three final takeaways.
So if we were to distill this down, what are the key takeaways? Let's try for three. First, an emotional insight.
I think it's the devastating recognition of how profoundly trauma can strip away our humanity, even eroding love. Yet paradoxically, the bond between father and son, however tested, remain the fragile center of survival. It shows both our vulnerability and our desperate need for connection.
Okay. An intellectual insight.
For me, it's the validation of questioning as a form of faith and moral engagement. Weissel teaches that grappling with God, with suffering, with history's horrors, isn't a sign of weak faith, but perhaps the deepest expression of it. Challenging indifference is an intellectual and moral duty.
And finally, a universal, practical life lesson.
It has to be the imperative to remember and to speak out, that silence aids the oppressor, and bearing witness, even in small ways, against injustice in our own times, is not just a choice, it's an ethical obligation for everyone. Your voice matters.
Closing narration.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.